RockZone.com.
Now, TalkZone presents The Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why, insights and solutions to some of America's most troubling societal problems. Featuring community activist Robert L. Woodson Sr., who has spent decades promoting solutions to some of the most challenging problems facing our nation today. Now, here's your host, Bob Woodson.
Welcome, everyone. This is Bob Woodson, and we're pleased that you are joining us today for The Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why. Today we're going to focus on the question is who has the power to transform high-risk kids, or the kids who are blowing their brains out on our city streets? Our guests are some community activists who are experienced and have experienced all the attractions and the consequences of the drug and gang life. What are they doing with their lives now may surprise you. We also, as we do on the show, are looking for solutions. And our first guest today will be Todd and Lance Furtado, founders of the King of Kings Foundation in Queens, New York. Todd and Lance are former drug kingpins and ex-gang members who made a decision to change their lives to become motivational, inspirational speakers. And also, they're giving back to the community from which they have taken so much. And they're doing this by being a role model to young people, intervening in their lives, representing, having events to motivate their lives. In other words, they have become witnesses to kids that a person who has experienced all of the things that they have, it is possible to change and become a new person. And as ex-offenders or people who were incarcerated, they have a very unique approach to gang intervention and violence prevention. They utilize their experience from the past lifestyles to get a strong message and actions out that have the consequences of transforming young people. We're also talking with Reverend DeForest Buster Soares, who is a pastor of First Baptist Church of Lincoln Gardens in Somerset, New Jersey, and has created many initiatives to address the problems in his communities and nationwide. He also served as chairman of U.S. Federal Elections Assistance Commission and New Jersey. He was also New Jersey Secretary of State. Welcome, everybody. I want to start with you, Todd. Of course, I received a scathing article that was written by the Daily News saying that Queens Representative Meeks directed $290,000 for convicted drug dealers, the King of Kings anti-drug nonprofit. And it goes on to just rip you guys apart and castigate the congressman as well as Pastor Floyd Flake, making all kinds of innuendos. And I was really incensed by what I read. And just what has been the response of your community to these attacks on you? And tell our listeners something about the important work you're doing, and what brought about your transformation?
Opposed to the newspaper article, the community is outraged. They are very appalled about what's going on because they understand that it takes a person to come from the streets to go back to the streets to save our children's lives. They know that no one from Harvard with a Harvard graduate degree is going to come to the streets and cater to our children. We know how to cater to their needs, and we're doing a good job. And, you know, I truly believe that, you know, one has an opinion, they're entitled to their opinion, but when you try to shape the minds of other people who know you're doing a positive thing to turn it into a negative, I think, you know, there's many words that could be said, but I say shame on you, because once again, we know negativity sells. And when you're polluting the newspaper about people who made a conscious decision that they're going to lay down their lives by any means necessary to reach our younger generation, not only in the state of New York, but throughout the nation, when you bash them, you're sending a message to our younger generation that we don't care. We want no one to care about you, but we're not going to let that stop us. We're going to continue to travel and do what we do because we know that we have a platform and we travel in our right state of mind, which gives us a voice to be heard. So there's no way we can sit on it.
Lance, what is it that changed you? I know, what is it that just caused you to turn your life around away from that that wayward life and gangs and drugs and whatnot? Some people say that unless you have something that offers the same income, then you can't possibly expect young people to change.
Well, first let me say I want to thank you for having us on your show today. We truly appreciate you giving us the podium to be heard. What helped me change my life, first and foremost, is by the grace of God and my walk with God. Knowing that we caused a lot of devastation in the streets of Southeast Jamaica, Queens, and abroad, we were part of the demise and the destruction that took place in an era that no one really likes to talk about. And while incarcerated, I took a self-examination look into my life and understanding, you know, what were some of the things that persuaded me to make the decisions that I made. And taking a closer look, I discovered that it was actually a form of depression, not having the things that other kids in my neighborhood had. You know, I grew up in a single-parent home, me and my brothers, and the block that we grew up on, every home on that block had what we describe as a fully functional home. So they had a mom and a dad. They had dual income. So those kids had what they wanted. We didn't have what we needed. And that swayed our thoughts and our minds. And actually, it was a form of depression. But while incarcerated, I started realizing that incarceration was just really a big entity of making money. And I come to understand that it was being called a prison industrial complex. And it was just a modern-day form of slavery. And I said, wow, I fell into a trap, and I'm paying the price for the falling into this trap. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure our youth, our young adults, our future generation, don't fall into the same traps that I fell into. I said, so upon my release from incarceration, I'm going to visit schools, libraries, recreation centers, youth detention centers to get the message out about what's truly going on. And when I sat and spoke with my brother Todd, you know, we were very both like-minded and said, you know what, well, this is our mission. This is what's been placed in our spirit. And we're going to break that generational curse of that pipeline from the schoolyard to the prison yard. So that's what first compelled me. Mm-hmm. And of course, first and foremost, it was a transformation that I went through when I was born again and I accepted Christ as my Lord and Savior, because correction comes from within self. So I had to correct myself first. And I couldn't do that on my own, because every time I leaned on my own understanding, I messed it up. So I had to start learning how to trust in the Lord and seek Him first, knowing that He will, you know, guide my way and guide my path and lead me down that straight and narrow. So that's what I had to do first, was make a conscious decision that I'm not going to settle any longer for the stigma that's been placed on us.
Buster Soares, you have made a conscious decision in the conduct of your church that it was going to make a difference in the lives of young people, similar to what we've heard from Clyde. Tell me about some of your experience with some of the young people. I think Clyde Briggs is one I met. Tell me about what they just said and what's your reaction to it, and what is your church doing? What should churches be doing?
Well, I have a church that has grown to a membership of 7,000 people in suburban New Jersey, and we border New Brunswick, which is an urban area, and Somerset, which is a suburban area. And we draw on people from 95 different communities in New Jersey. When I arrived at the church, there were two rival groups of young people who lived in two different housing developments, and they were across the street from each other. And my church sat between them. And when I'd get to church on Sunday morning, there would be bullet shells in my parking space from the conflict on Saturday night. It was a very serious matter. The police basically stayed away because their philosophy was if these kids kill each other, then there are fewer problems for them to address. In responding to these young people, it was clear to me that I, having grown up in the suburbs, having graduated from an Ivy League seminary, being the pastor of a big church, while I had the passion to help them, I didn't have the credibility to help them. I didn't have the knowledge base to help them. I didn't have the tools to help them. And so what I did was recruit some young people like these young men from New York to whom you're speaking, who had gone astray, who had come to themselves, who had allowed God to change their lives, and who were now willing to give back. And I provided the resources for them to do their work. As a result of that, we've had a strategy now over the last few years where we constantly recruit young people who know the streets, who were in the streets, who have rejected the streets, but who now want to save the streets, to use our resources. When I say our, I mean the church's resources and other institutions to do what they know works. And we've had a drastic reduction in crime, increase in graduations. It just works, and it's common sense. I mean, when we're trying to fight a war in Afghanistan, Bob, and the major strategy, the primary strategy used by our military is to get Afghanis who now see the light and are willing to help win over Afghanis against the Taliban. So if it works in Afghanistan, and if it worked in the Bible, I mean, the Apostle Paul wrote half the New Testament. He was the greatest threat to the church until he got converted. Then why shouldn't it work in New York where you have two young men who said, we want to give back to the neighborhood that we helped destroy?
So in other words, what you're saying, that the criticism in the paper, if you were to put that in a biblical context, that's like saying people gave money to a Christian assassin.
That's right.
Rather than when Paul was Saul, until he became changed. And these young men have undergone that same kind of Damascus experience.
Yeah, we can't argue on the one hand that people should change, but then on the other hand, when they do change, we won't recognize or respect their change.
And that's what we're having here. Does that resonate with you all, Todd and Lance?
Yes. It resonates to the point that we are, I mean, like Todd expressed, the community is outraged about it because this same newspaper that printed all of this negative stuff about us in the past 3 years have printed over a half a dozen positive articles about us, praising us and commending us for the work that we've done and that the things that we have accomplished. And so we're sitting here saying, wow, I mean, this is the same paper that just, you know, saluted us and praised us and said, if there's any way that we can help further, you know, help you get your message out, please give us a call and we will do that. And then when this article came out, we were like blown away.
Why do you think may not be obvious, but like you were saying, a lot of the money that is spent to intervene in youth violence are going to traditional organizations, Boys and Girls Clubs, YMCAs, and other groups like that. A lot of academics who are, they have mentoring programs that are directed to this population. And even in the face of these tremendous investments, we are seeing the problem escalate. What is it that's unique about the approach that you talked about and Pastor Sori has talked about? What's unique about that?
Well, you know what makes it so unique? We can relate firsthand to what our youth may be experiencing or going through, because we've been there and we've done that and we survived it. We like to describe it as survive, you know, we come straight from the struggle and we survived the belly of the beast. You know, that's how we describe it. And the youth recognize that and they see that there's nothing phony about us. That the things that we speak on, we've actually been through and it has been documented. And the youth say, you know what? These brothers understand firsthand about overcoming adversity.
Yeah, the other thing, I want to interrupt you for one second.
Sure.
The other thing that gives you such credibility is that you were successful. It's not as if you were unsuccessful wannabes copying somebody else. I mean, you were good at what you did.
You mean life?
That's right.
You know what? I tried not to really touch on that, but yes. So we want to make it plain and simple.
That's why I touched on it for you.
Well, let's do this. Let's make it plain and simple so the listeners can have a clear picture, of who the Furtado brothers once were.
Right.
You know, we were deemed to be, you know, drug kingpins. So we wasn't just here in New York. We were in 23 different states. We did things that most people dream about doing. We gave birth to what the, you know, news sources and the government deems to be New York's most dangerous, you know. We were once upon a time millionaires at the age of 19. So, yes, we did things at a level that most people dream about, to the point that the media gravitated to us, and they put us on the front cover of Fed magazine and Felon magazine. They highlighted us in BET's American Gangster. You know, I mean, there's so many different things that they used to highlight us, but they thought they was going to glorify some negativity, and we used that podium to promote those positive messages. So, yes, the youth, they know who we are, they gravitate to us, and they know that we're credible.
Yeah, and Mr. Woodson.
Yes.
One of the things, this is Todd, one of the things that we're facing today, and it's sad, like Lance made mention, the newspaper gave us 5-star articles because we was doing everything because we truly have a passion for it, because we know who we was and we know the mess that we caused. Now that someone, an organization, wants to financially support us, now that's the trouble. Now that's the problem. And I truly believe if you can pour money into a prison system which create criminals, why wouldn't you support a person who made a conscious decision, or persons that made a conscious decision to turn their life around and stop not only our black jailers, but jail is no respecter of persons. So we don't target just what we say, our people. We target every young person that's walking the streets of face of the planet Earth, because at the end of the day, they're going to be the ones that control America for us. So if we can't take stock in them today, we know the prison system will tomorrow.
And also, like you were saying, these are not problems that are peculiar to black youth. And in fact, there's a recent article that says in conservative, wealthy Orange County, California, that the Aryan Brothers are a white supremacist group, are recruiting among upper-income white kids. These are kids growing up without moral content to their lives, and that emptiness in them is being filled by these gang members. And so the remedies that are being produced in Queens by the two of you and others like you are not just remedies that can be applied to the kids in your community, but you really have an important resource to this nation about how one can fill the emptiness of these kids. The one characteristic, too, that's important is that the kids have your cell phone numbers.
Exactly.
You live in and practice what you do within the zip code experiencing the problem, both the geographic zip code and the cultural zip code. So you understand these kids, and they understand you, and others who are paid are advocates. But it seems to me that the two of you are witnesses to kids, and we know in the courts of law, a witness is a much more credible source of information. We are going to continue this discussion right after our break. We're talking about individuals who are activists, who have the ability to positively impact the lives of high-risk kids. Our guests have been Todd and Lance Furtado, former drug kingpins who have transformed their lives for good and have founded the King of Kings Foundation in Queens, New York. We're also on with Pastor DeForest Bustosore, Senior Pastor, First Baptist Church of Lincoln Gardens in Somerset, New Jersey. I'm Bob Woodson, President, Center for Neighborhood Enterprise, and we will return right after these messages.